Welcome, welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
You hear that, Ern? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one source for news, theories, discussion and interviews with people from the Potter books and films. I know a small amount myself, having written the books. My name is J.K. Rowling. I am now happy to introduce your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
And Fran.
Welcome, welcome. We are the four regular Pottercasters joined by a billion people on the internet.
A gajillion people all at once.
If you ever want to hear us recording one of these live shows, keep an eye on podcast.com and on leakynews.com, where you can see an announcement, which will tell you when we record our shows on TalkShoe, and you can join us.
Yes.
It's wonderful.
Or just figure out when somebody else is doing live shows, and then we're bound to do one at the same time, because that's how we roll.
Shut up. That's how we roll.
This is when we're recording.
We could do a live show when we're not recording, but I don't think that would be fun for anyone.
Oh, I know. Oh, so. I'm just screwing around. Oh, I can't say any bad words because normally we cut those out. Darn
yeah.
it. Anybody's gonna hear
dang
me.
Dang it.
All right, let's work it.
We got a big, big, big week of Snape. Actually, this is the start of 3 weeks of Snape.
We'd call it Snapecast, but somebody else owns that.
Yeah.
So we'll call it Snape Show.
It's the trifecta of Snape is what it is. The trifecta of Snape about to happen.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
Well, we're going to be recording three separate canon conundrums, and then you're going to hear, we'll also have a bit by bit in this show.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's it. Yes. John, when's the next acting troupe thing happening?
You know what? I think it's about done, actually.
Ooh.
I think the third one's about done. Oh,
whoa,
Frankie, if you did the comic version, if we did, like, this animation thing with that, that would be sick. We could put that on DVD.
I mean, I really am enjoying the story and everything, and so, like, when I first heard it, I have too many side projects going on right now that I've never finished, so I need to finish those first, but it'd be one of those things that it'd be so much fun to draw, like, a comic version of it. Like what you're talking
people
about, John,
would freak out.
Something about it.
But yeah, you should expect to see that coming out fairly soon here. If not with this, no, it won't be with this show, but probably next week's show, I'd have to think.
Awesome. So Podcast 182, let's just hold it to it. We'll have another piece of the acting troupe in the next show.
Oh, God.
But for now, let's find out what's happening in the world of Harry Potter news, which is always exciting.
Oh, it's a Harry Potter show.
All right. Rupert Grint fans, this is a warning to you now.
Off.
Calm, breathe, and if you have not gone to our galleries, you will see new photos of Mr. Grint from his film,
yeah.
Cherry Bomb, when he is
about to drop trow.
Well, not quite, but he doesn't have a shirt on, and I know, and it's looking pretty hot. There we go, but there we go. I mean, if Dan can do it, so can Rupert. Just saying. There they go.
I mean, and you know who's next after that?
Well, yeah.
Stop.
John.
Matthew Lewis.
Matt Lewis!
Matthew Lewis Shut is up. Ready to go. He's got his robe on. He's like, give me the signal, and here I go. That's all he says.
Stop. Just.
Have you seen pictures of that kid lately? He's a good-looking kid.
He is.
I was at Borders the other day, and I was looking through, like, the clearance section of calendars, and there's a Half-Blood Prince one with a bunch of pictures. Some of them I hadn't seen, or just not in that good of quality. And,
yeah.
There's one of Matthew Lewis, like, sitting on his bed, and he looks like a full-grown man, like, all mopey in his pajamas. I'm like,
he's all grown up.
And it's weird. I'm like, oh, look at Neville all grown up. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was very interesting. One man I do not know who if he's gone nude or not is Jim Broadbent, and we heard a new interview from him. I believe he was fully clothed, too, at the point. He was talking to the LA Times. I know. And he was talking about his character of Professor Slughorn in the upcoming Harry Potter and Half-Blood Prince. And, you know, I thought this was really interesting. He described Slughorn as a good man, a decent man, but a weak man. What do you think about that characterization?
I think that's really accurate. I was kind of glad when he was so insightful about him. Because he doesn't have the, until the end of book 7, he doesn't have the fortitude to do what's right. over what is easy. Like, he won't be, like, mean Death-Eater guy, but to make his life more comfortable, he'll make a couple of dodgy choices, I think.
Well, we'll just think, but look at the turnabout of his character. I mean, from what we know in Happy Prince, at the end, he is there dueling Voldemort.
Yep.
I mean, whoa, that's, you know, a lot of people would say, you'd find him, not me, but there he was. And I thought that was a really dramatic turnabout.
He left with the Slytherin table, but then came back.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And not only
with reinforcements, Joe said later.
Yeah, that's right, with reinforcements. But still, I mean, and then the fact that he came back at one is amazing. But then to go and stand face to face with Voldemort and duel him, I think is pretty amazing. I like that. But what else is cool too that we heard from Slughorn is that he's read the books too, or Jim Broadbent, which gave me
wow, bonus.
It's like, look here, Mr. Gambon, there you go. I don't mean to pick on him, but I'm just
chances
like,
are he'll probably actually watch the movie when it's finished too. Gosh, we can only
hope.
Did
that actually happen? That Gambon hasn't watched
Gambon doesn't watch the movies, no.
Oh wow, that's funny.
He doesn't care, he's got this.
Has he never been at a premiere?
I don't remember any.
They
Gambon
walk right
shot.
Into the theater unless he walks in and leaves.
Yeah. I don't know if he'll ever
maybe
come to
nervous.
A theater or one of the premieres. He might, but maybe he'll come to the Half-Blood Prince. Who knows?
Interesting.
I'm sorry.
Michael G.
Interesting. Well, it is sort of his movie.
Yeah, it is. I would hope that he would.
You'd think he'd want to watch this big dramatic death scene, but Hermione kills him off the tower.
And you can hear gasp everywhere. What?
It's going to happen. And then right after that, Snape's going to run up and be like, darn it. He missed his opportunity.
I missed it. That didn't happen. I missed it.
Shucks.
Foiled again.
Yeah.
By that wacky, wily Hermione Granger. All right.
What's next
save
in our top five,
too.
Susie?
Speaking of cast members that like the book, we heard from Dan Radcliffe, and I thought this was really interesting because very few of the cast members actually talk about fans and their dedication to the books, or the phrase book purist is used sometimes. And Dan actually made comments about that, and I actually thought this was kind of interesting because he was talking about how at first fans might have been like, about adhering to the books and they had their minds made up and weren't necessarily become fans of the films. And then, but he felt that the majority of the people out there, because the fan base has grown at about the rate the films have come out, we've managed to keep making them darker and dark enough to maintain the interest of these people who, for the book purists at first, that didn't like it. And I thought that was really an interesting comment for him to reflect on it like that, because I just thought most actors would just like, you know, but that was really kind of cool.
Yeah, would not care, and probably most of them.
Yeah.
Well, I like to hear that he's thinking, but if I hear one more person say it's a bit darker than the last one, about every movie that comes out, I'm gonna throw my head through my monitor.
Yeah. I know.
Honestly.
Yeah.
And this is just like a description.
That's becoming...
Always a description. It's darker. It's like, we're going to have like, Deathly Hallows Part 2 is going to be like pitch black, and you're going to have to squint just to make out anything. Because they'll have made it so darn dark, you won't be able to see a dang thing.
Yep. Well, it's true. It's very, I mean, it's becoming a catchword for where the story is getting more complex. That happens in every series, in every series, as you get forward, you're getting deeper into the story, so of course it's going to seem darker.
I know.
I've never known a series to get lighter as it goes along.
They're
going to
change everybody's house colors to black and make all the boys wear guy liner and slick everybody's hair down.
Gosh. Hey, we haven't really talked with an audience about the PG. Can we get some instant, typed comments from people about what they think about the PG rating?
Oh, is that one of our news items this week, or no?
No, that was last week.
No, it's last week, but...
Yeah. Oh, it's a
poll. Since this one has a lighter... It's technically a lighter rating. It's not, you know, it's PG-13, so...
Yeah.
Come the boos.
You know, let me see what people have been saying.
What do you think...
Boo, PG.
What does the audience here think would have been the... top reasons why, based off the book, it should be PG-13.
Hang on. Guest 26 says, I've seen the movie. I think PG is fine. Have you now, Guest 26? Guest 26, please call us. What's your name?
Yeah, my name's Katie. I live in Chicago, so I got to see the free movie screening thingy, the private one down here, so... Or up here, I don't know.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it was actually, okay, so this movie was, like, a lot better than the fifth, I will say. Because the fifth So many things are so completely different from what I read in the book. But this one, like the sixth, it was just...
Careful with the spoilers.
Oh, yeah, no spoilers.
Yeah,
tell me what you want to know about it so that I can tell you.
Does anybody
die? How come
you say
PG is okay? Shut up. How come you say that PG is okay? What does that mean when you say that? For this?
Okay, so, you know, I've seen a lot of movies because I love movies. So whenever I watch a movie that was made maybe 5 years ago, I notice that anything PG does not have any swearing or any type of, like, violence that includes a lot of blood, right? Well, these movies today, there's so much more that's different. It's just the standards of the ratings have gotten so much, like, so much more, fucking say it. Give me a word. They are looser. There we go. I mean, it was a really good movie. I watched it and I thought, hey, it's fine, you know? I mean, of course, you're going to be disappointed by some things. But a lot of things are going to be just the way you imagine them, you know? Like, the second Semper scene might piss a lot of people off because it's not how it should have been, I don't think. But, I mean, it wasn't dumbed down. It's just to keep it for little kids to watch it as well, they did, like, they didn't open his shirt. And so you saw the bleeding.
All right, guys. So it's just like... blood coming through.
Yeah.
Okay.
And huge spoiler.
And then Snake comes in and he, like, when he does the healing, the counter curse for Second Sempra, the blood just sort of, like, seeps away from the shirt. Basically, it doesn't really go through or whatever. So, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it was a good movie. So, I think even if it's a PG movie, it's going to be fine. It's just, I think the standards have just changed. That's all. It's not a big deal. It's just like I was watching all the comments just popping up onto your news thingy, and everybody was raging about this. It's just pissing so many people off, and I'm like, calm down. The movie's fine, you know.
Yeah.
It's not gonna.
Well, were the effects even done though? I meant so you really couldn't tell about the theory.
Yeah, no, the effects were great. Like, they weren't all completely finished yet. So sometimes you would see Dumbledore's hand just green with a bunch of little orange dots. But then you also saw it completed at the beginning of the movie when Harry puts his hand on his arm and then they apparate and everything. And he's about to ask him, hey, what happened to your hand? And he's like, well, that's not the time. You get to see his hand there and just, oh, it looks great. It's perfect. Love it. It's really like...
I know what happens.
Now's not the time. I'll tell you after I'm dead.
Yeah. So there's still a lot of making out then? There's still a lot of lavender and Ron being obnoxious?
That's all in there. It's just, I mean, you know when they did the snogging part in the fifth movie and everything?
Yeah.
That's sort of how it is for Lavender and Ron, you know, except, you know, they're standing up and everything.
Just like that little chaste kiss under the mistletoe?
I'm sorry?
Just that little kiss under the nargles? It's not like heavy handed, like on his lap, kind
of. Yeah, you know, he like sort of pulls her up to her. To him, I should say. Sorry, messed it up. But what's it called? Yeah, Lavender like sort of jumps up and just kisses him. I'm sorry.
Is Dean at all in the movie, or they took it out?
The Ginny and Harry kiss just kind of really disappointed me. I will say that right now.
Ginny and Dean Thomas.
No, they don't. I don't think they do. You just sort of hear that they are going out. I don't think Ron explodes about it either. I don't remember that.
That would have been the best scene. That would have been the best scene for Bonnie and the best scene for.
It would have been. I love the canary scene though with Hermione and Ron and everything. Oh, it was perfect.
It didn't happen.
Oh,
it was great.
Oh, you just made Frankie's day.
Okay. Oh man. Katie, we need to talk to you.
No,
we need to talk to you at length at another time. But oh my God, we've got to keep moving with the show.
Okay, cool. Oh,
thank you so much.
Oh,
that's wonderful.
Go on from talk to.
All right, great. And we'll talk about the Friday then. All right.
We'll talk to you later. Thank you so much, Katie.
Bye.
I'm so happy the canaries are in there.
Yay. John, guess what?
What's that?
Dobby is free!
Dobby's still free!
The Hallows. Yes, and Toby Jones is going to be his voice again for Deathly Hallows.
Woo-hoo! Yes.
I'm very excited.
I was concerned because for a while I heard they were recasting his voice for Samuel L. Jackson. That was a heavy rumor on ComingSoon.net. They said Samuel L. was wanting the role of Dobby, and they were considering it for ratings, but they gave it back to this guy.
Not so.
Yeah.
My brain just kind of exploded with that one.
I could totally see that.
The play I wrote, how come that's enormously... The guy Toby Jones says that he was in the play what I wrote. How come that's so familiar to me in terms of Potter?
I don't know.
Was somebody else in it, or did somebody else write it? Was Jim Dale in it?
Maybe. Oh, good question, Mally. I don't know. Dang, I didn't look it up.
I gotta look it up.
Okay.
I'm gonna go look it up while we chat.
He was doing the voice, the actor, Toby Jones. What Melissa's talking about is that he got the part as Dobby, the voice part of Dobby, because he had been doing this play. And,
I know, I got it.
Okay.
Sorry, it hit me. Remember when Dan, like a long time ago, appeared on the stage in like a big dress?
That's it!
That was the play what I wrote.
Oh my gosh, small world.
No. Okay, I'm sorry, go on, Sue.
No, but Toby Jones was doing that play, and he was tired, and his voice was broken up, so he went to do the audition for the voice of Dobby, and then he said he reached registers in his voice that he couldn't do now. Isn't that funny? Oh, so that's exciting he's going to be back, because, I mean, we had talked to David Heyman before in September, and he told us that Dobby was going to be, they're going to bring him back, but this is confirmation that the same actor is coming back, so I was very excited. And then, yes, I'm very, very... So, Melissa, do we know, is Joe hanging out with Obama this weekend? Because I don't think so, right?
No, she's not. What a silly, silly little rumor. And I got all like, oh, yes, of course she's going. Of course he invited her. He loves J.K. Rowling. You know, I was all like, she's going to go to the inauguration. I'm so jealous. And no, she's not going to the inauguration. It's been a silly rumor. This is how it works. I can't believe it's so ludicrous that this is actually how the press works. And I'm so embarrassed. But it really is how the press works. Somebody writes an article that says, hey, Sasha and Malia Obama like Harry Potter. Wouldn't it be fun if one day Obama's sure to include her in a state dinner or like an arts thing or whatever? And then another article is like, yeah, maybe even the inauguration. And then another article is like, so it's reported that she's going to the inauguration. Oh, it's so frustrating. Wow. And then it gets around to us and we have to go and ask people who laugh.
We have to be the responsible news. Leave it to
me.
We did.
Set the rumors
straight. Oh, you silly.
No.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm totally a Joe Obama shipper.
Stop.
Am I alone in this? That'd be like the most powerful, coolest couple.
Okay. I think Dr. Murray might have a little issue with them.
Dr. Murray would be like, well, it's the president. Go ahead, Joe.
And one other thing, too, just on the heels of shooting things down, we also heard that, there are no plans for the Harry Potter musical. You know, last week we heard Dan saying he would be too.
Darn it.
We'll see if that's no plans, full stop. No.
Sue went and picked that out of the original article because it was a long interview. But she you know, as Sue tends to do, found the news and, you know, and put that in. So that was on Leaky like way before. So I was really happy to hear it finally kiboshed.
There are so many crappier musicals out there than that, though. And real quick, guys, a quick Leaky Roundup. The Crafty Witches are currently hosting the January 2009 Craft Along, Magical Needlework. No matter whether cross-stitch, embroidery, or plastic canvas are your cup of tea, or if you're a first-year who just wants to learn, stop by the Craft Along thread to join us. Also new with those crafty people this week is the addition of their very own YouTube channel. Head over to youtube.com and find TLC Crafty Witches and subscribe today.
Well, that was our big... Melissa, we have a special news, really breaking as of today, you posted, right? Some news.
Yeah, PotterCast. What is it?
Going
to be joining our friends at LocalCast for a Leaky Mug. Yeah, it's going to be at 3 o'clock in the morning, and we're terrible.
That's past everybody's bedtime.
3 in the morning. What?
That's past everybody's bedtimes. Hey, do we have to get tickets?
It is, well, everybody does. You have to, get tickets to Azkatraz and also tickets to the screening at midnight.
Yeah.
We're all going to go watch the movie. And
yeah.
we are going to again go back to the hotel and have a podcast directly afterwards.
Dang.
And anybody who stays awake for the entire thing gets a cookie.
Hey, who's making the cookies?
And I will have chocolate-covered espresso beans to keep me lively and attentive.
Oh, that sounds yummy.
And Pellegrino.
So we should probably get those tickets to that movie soon, because that movie theater could fill up.
Yeah, that movie theater might sell out. I should probably put a link to that on the page. I'll do that after this recording, guys. Go to Leaky, and you'll see in the announcement for the Leaky Mug, there will also be for buying your HBP tickets.
Perfect.
In San Francisco. And
I've never been to San Francisco.
Boston, we will be having our biggest podcast ever.
Speaking of, let's remind people, too, that February 1st, prices are going to go up for LeakyCon, so buy now, register now. Do it, do it, do it.
February 1st, prices are going up, just like Sue just said. So get them now, because why pay more? We have so many people. We have more people than we can fit in the conference on the intent to attend list who are, you know, so all those people are going to be buying their tickets. So if you're not on that list and you haven't gotten your ticket yet, you should probably run. So get it now. Okay. All right. Is that it for the news this week, guys?
Yes, I think so.
I think so.
Exciting news segment. Next up,
yes.
Which one? Bit by Bit or Canon?
Oh, yeah. Let's throw it to the Bit by Bit.
Bit by bit.
Okay, see you later.
Day by day.
Bit by bit.
Talking about chapters each and every day.
Bit by bit. We listen, we talk.
And welcome to Bit by Bit, where we discuss Deathly Hallows bit by bit.
Little bits.
Right now we're on the Silver Doe, chapter 19.
Yay! Been waiting for this chapter.
We're getting through it.
It's like we're getting there a bit at a time.
Yes.
It's almost the halfway point, right? Sort of.
Yeah, you know, the week that we finished, Joe's going to be like, great, they're done with that. Now I can announce my next book.
Oh, yes, because that's what she's waiting on. She's waiting on us, you guys.
Oh,
how
man.
Insensitive of us.
Listen, art cannot be rushed, okay?
It's true.
It's true.
It's very true.
Pressure's on.
Okay, let's get to it.
Harry and Hermione are chilling. No, I'm not going to read the notes.
That was the actual beginning of the notes, everybody, just FYI.
So they're hanging out. It's cold. They're in their little tent camping situation, probably snuggling, and they're just keeping watch for Death Eaters and other bad creatures, and they're pretty anxious. They're still pretty rattled from the Godric's Hollow situation, but they're trying to figure out where they would go next from this spot.
Can I just tell you something first before they go to their next place? The Sneakoscope, I'm always amazed at the lack of comment in the entire series about how the Sneakoscope was always accurate. Always. They heard somebody outside, but it wasn't somebody who was shifty, so it wasn't going off. And nobody ever says, like, oh god, we should have trusted the Sneakoscope. Even if there is somebody outside, we're sure he's on our side. It's just funny.
Yeah, totally.
It is funny.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Do you think they would, like, incorporate that magic into more things, like alarm systems and stuff? Like, you could have, like, a little wristwatch that would tell you if somebody bad's coming.
Sneakoscope wrist?
Moody had a bunch of that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but then Moody was pegged to be, like, the crazy one, not, like, the smart, like,
yeah.
cautious one.
But those are the kind of things you would have, like, in your junior detective novels, you know? I mean, like, little Wizarding Watch. You know, something. They're not get smart. They're not going to have watches, John, that they're just going to beep off.
Oh, I would. I love gadgets.
Inspector Gadget. That's who they would
I'd
be.
I'd be the dork. I'd be the equivalent of the wizard dork who had the Palm Pilot 5 years ago before the iPhone was ever invented.
Honestly, I would, too. All those gadgets, those Wizarding Gadgets, oh, man.
I've always loved the Wizarding Gadgets. I wish you would have written more of them.
I like the gadgets in Dumbledore's office.
Oh, yeah.
Those are beautiful.
I'd love to know what every one of those things did.
He had a gadget that seemed to be specifically made to tell him the nature of Harry's problem.
I don't know where he bought that thing.
Wasn't that handy?
Yeah.
Convenient.
You think maybe he invented it. What do you think that advice did? Was it just that, or is it just like a problem solver, or like a...
Which one was this?
The one that showed like the snakes dividing and things.
When he tapped it and the snakes came out, yeah, and he's like, oh, but in essence divided, and he's like, and he like mumbles to himself.
Provocative. Shifts his eyes and puts it away.
Huh, now, which book was that in again? This one?
Five.
That was Goblet. Five. Oh, was it five?
No, it's Order of the Phoenix when they're waiting to, when they're, he just told them about Arthur, and he wouldn't look, he wouldn't meet Harry's eyes.
Oh, right, 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 that's right, that's right.
Huh. Maybe that was just more of like a revealing type of
plot.
Pensive-y.
Reveal your secrets.
Reveal your secrets.
Well, he like tapped it and like the answer came out.
Yeah.
It's funny.
If you can't see where it keeps its brain, you don't trust it, Dumbledore.
What's happening next?
Right on. What is happening next?
Well, they're getting ready.
This is after the craziness.
The attack.
At Godric's Hollow. And so Harry is all blue and sad about not having his wand, which is an appropriate response, in my opinion. And is this when he borrows Hermione's wand to go on watch, and he's getting it frustrated
because
he can't get the Patronus going and all that jazz?
It just was not working properly for him.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is when he's doing it.
Oh, okay.
They went... I'm not sure, but they... No, it's not. They went. They just go to the Forest of Dean, and he kind of goes around kind of moody, emo Harry for a while. And his senses...
I hate emo Harry.
...seem alert.
You know what's fun for me? It's just this... It's that jar of blue flames that Hermione... And that's just an obscure reference, because I just remember, you know, how it was so different in the movie. Every time...
Yes.
Just kind of ruined it for me. So every time when I read this part, I'm like, oh, if they'd only had just done that in the movie... It was just kind of a random thought.
Well, what I always thought in the first book, when she specifically notes that bluebell flames were instantly a specialty of Hermione's, and then it comes up again in two. I thought that would be a big part. I thought that a bluebell flame would have something to do with the end of the book.
It's like Voldemort's weakness.
Yes, this is a bluebell flame. You cannot kill me. Is that a blue flame?
I have 7 Horcruxes. If I'm only vulnerable now, it's a blue ball flame. Keep it away from me.
Yes. Keep it away. But I thought it would have something to do with, I don't know, something. It was just, I guess, a red herring.
I didn't think of that. I would have probably anticipated it having something to do with breaking a Horcrux or something.
Right. Like, you know, like have some sort of importance that it was important that Hermione had that as a specialty, you know?
Yeah. Hmm. So, but it was interesting that they just did. She didn't conjure up some other sort of heat and... you know, creative spell, and there was that blue thing. And I just thought it was funny, because I understand why they didn't have the fire, because they didn't want to reveal their presence, but it was just kind of funny, I don't know.
Why couldn't they have, like, kind of like a space heater or something?
Exactly! Don't know.
Or like some hand warmers.
Don't they have charms to make themselves warmer?
I know. I mean, come on, what kind of wizards are you people?
Well, remember, in book 6, Harry couldn't dry himself off.
Exactly.
So I don't think he was most adept in the most...
True.
Like, subtle charms. Like, that's something they're not going to teach in class. Like, a warming charm. It's like, what? What do you need that for?
Oh, Flitwick would.
But it's Hermione. I mean, as a woman, you'd think you would know how to dry clothes.
Oh, what? Did you not just say that? You
Dude,
did not.
Don't take the bait. He doesn't... Don't take the bait. He wants us to react like that to that stupid comment.
So anyway, we're moving on now. So this is kind of neat, though. Can we talk about this? Why did he not open up the mat if he's thinking about Ginny? Why didn't he just want to see her little dot? I mean, I just thought that was kind of strange, that little paragraph. And he was, remembered he was getting all mournful and he's thinking about Ginny. And then he decided not to open up the map. And I didn't quite get why he didn't do that.
Maybe he didn't want to, like, just get himself into, like, a deeper stupor.
No, it was Christmas. She wouldn't be at the castle.
Oh, that's right. That's why. But okay, you're right. Never mind.
I'm sorry.
No, that's exactly right. That's why he didn't do it. I don't know.
No, so
fun.
It's all dark outside, and he sees a light coming toward him.
Ooh.
Oh, yes.
Ooh, I am the ghost of Christmas past. I am the ghost of your parents' past, literally. But this is interesting about a Patronus. It says the source of the light stepped out from behind an oak. Well, everything we've seen of Patronus is cantering and being in action, and they are never just acting like the animals they are.
Yeah.
Imagine the control that Snape must have over this thing.
It's so graceful.
So graceful. It just stepped out from behind an oak and was able to lead Harry somewhere.
Well,
you know?
I wonder how often Snape is in the practice of calling upon his Patronus just to keep him company or to cheer him up after being with the Death Eaters for such a long time. He probably is so good at that spell. from having used it, considering it's Lily. It's his memory.
It's his only one. It's the only one he's allowed to have, really.
Yeah.
It's probably very complex, too, because it's probably like Harry's Patronus in the sense that it's very powerful because it's such a conflicted happy memory. You know what I mean? Because like, it's Lily, but at the same time, it's like, it's Lily, his biggest heartbreak and loss.
Yeah. Plot-wise, though, it also answers the question of why, in terms of protectors, the person to be a protector that comes out of Harry's wand in book three is not his mother who died for him, you know, because she needed that for Snape. And you can't reveal that it's a doe.
Yeah.
Well, we wouldn't have caught it that it was a doe.
You know, you were talking about it being so beautiful. I think it's a beautiful reflection of Snape's love.
Yeah.
I just think that's what it shows. You know, that it's such a beautiful thing, and it's graceful, and it just shows the depth and the breadth of his love for her, that it's exhibited in the grace of this creature. And I thought that was just, for me, I thought that was a very powerful statement about Snape himself, just the extraordinary strength of his memory and his love for her, that he can control for that much. Sorry. I know it was...
Why are you apologizing? Every time you apologize, I'm going to yell at you.
Well, no, because it was like, I could have said it like a minute or two ago, and you guys were going on the conversation. I just wanted to get that out there because you were just saying it, and I was like, oh, there's something great. But I just was thinking that. I was thinking, and it made me sad, though, the first time I was reading it, because I realized what that was, you know, that it was Lily, and it was just kind of like a love loss.
I was listening to that chapter the other night, just the Princess Tale chapter with all that. Yeah, it brought tears to my eyes because I honestly haven't heard or read that very often, more than a couple times, and it's just so moving.
All right, so he runs and runs towards where the doe, and the doe is kind of like a little bit like teasing him. She stops, she turns her head, it's like beckoning him forward, like really interacting. I think it's the only time we've seen a Patronus really interact this way.
Yeah. It's reacting to him following it, and when he gets close to it, it runs off and he chases it. And
well, it's smart on Snape's part too, because he had to wait around long enough for what's his face to get some sort of glimpse or whiff of where the kids were. Then he had to send the Patronus all the way there. Then he had to lure Harry outside of the protective charms that they built so that Ron could find him. I mean, it's some pretty complex planning on Snape's part.
Well, I don't know if Ron was in Snape's plans. I think Snape was not counting on Harry being so stupid as to wear the Horcrux as he
was. Oh, I see.
Exactly right.
Yeah, even Snape didn't think he would be that stupid.
Oh, he didn't know Ron left anyway. So yeah, that's never mind because he doesn't know who
he might there. He must have known Ron left. If the Death Eaters thought that Ron was at home, he probably knew that Ron wasn't supposed to be with them. You know. Okay, so they get to the pool, right?
Yeah.
Went to red at the bottom.
Mm-hmm. It's at the lake. Is it a pool or a lake or a pond or an ocean or what?
It's called a forest pool.
A forest pool. It must be a British expression.
You gotta love Snape. His idea of making Harry get it in conditions of valor and courage that he thinks that he won it properly is to make sure that he has to jump into a pool of icy water.
Right.
Snape hates him so much.
Yeah.
Is it bravery or is it an act of stupidity to dive under a frozen pool?
Well, see, a lot of people would say that being brave is being stupid. So I think that's an adequate assessment, just because a lot of times bravery talks about not putting yourself first, and that's typically not the most quote-unquote intelligent thing to do, because if you compromise yourself, how are you going to help other people? So I can see
maybe bravery in the service of a loftier goal.
Of a what?
Loftier goal.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Save the world. I mean, stupidity in the face of that. You know.
But I bring that up because I think it's one of those fun things that you can do in literature and just storytelling, how stupidity and bravery, you know, it's just a matter of paradigm and who's seeing it and who's doing it. Like, some people are like, that's so stupid. Other people are like, wow, that's so brave. You know, it's just, it's interesting. The ambiguity, there's a lot of fun to play with.
Like, it would occur to me to, like, maybe conjure, like, a fishing pole or something. Or, like, a rope with, like, a hook and, like, kind of...
This is Harry, though.
I know, I'm way more clever.
Well, but Harry starts thinking about how he got the sword last time. And how he got the sword last time was that he needed help... And he was acting bravely and in service to Dumbledore. And Dumbledore told him, only a true Gryffindor could have pulled that out of the hat, which meant that he had to be doing something Gryffindorish, and he needs to need... That's all he knows, that you need help, and you need to do something Gryffindorish. So, to him, brave in this moment, daring, nerve, and chivalry is what it says.
Mm-hmm.
That means jumping into the ice.
That'd be an awesome scene in the movie. I can just see him, like, using a spell to just completely bust up a frozen lake. Have all the ice go, like, shattering everywhere.
If they don't do this in the movie the way it's... Oh, my God. With the dough leading him through. If they don't take their time and make this what it could be, I'm going to be so angry.
Well, this could be the end of their movie or something. Or the beginning of part two. So it'd be like this big opening sequence. That'd be really hot.
I have to digress for just a minute. Because one of the great things I heard about criticisms of the book involves this chapter and this part particular that we're talking about right now. And I think it's actually one of Joe's... I love this about Joe, that the sword is in the lake, and if you've had any knowledge of, like, history or mythology.
Yeah.
And I think it's brilliant touch of Arthur.
Yeah.
And we're talking about those qualities of daring and chivalry, and I think Joe did that because Godric Gryffindor, I thought it was just a nod, an acknowledgement.
The lore.
Yes, and I thought it was beautiful. Yeah. I didn't view it as she couldn't think of anything. I thought it was a beautiful and wonderful symbolic gesture on her part. I mean, just, and I loved it. So for me, when I read that, I got chills because it just harkened back to the old founders and the old great, you know, these things that we grew up with. I mean, I think most people know the legend of King Arthur and stuff, and I love this. So I just wanted to say that, and it bothers me that people complain about it. Okay.
No, it's true, Sue, because she could have had it still in the water, still as crazy as Snape intended and requiring bravery, but could have been floating around in the water. It could have been hard to catch. The idea that, first of all, that it was stuck into something looking quite for the world to see as a cross, and then that he had to pull it out of rock.
Yes.
You know, the bottom of the lake is earth, is rock. No, I think you're absolutely right. That had to have been intentional.
Yeah, and it was it's a nice blend of all regards about the Excalibur and a lot because, you know, the Lady of the Lake, you know, she delivered the sword too. And so it's just a nice... That's, I didn't even catch that. That's great.
Snape is the Lady of the Lake.
No, it's Lily.
Oh,
It's lovely. Yeah.
And a lily is a water flower.
It is, but it's such a... I just love that, and we were talking about chivalry, and that, for me, I just love these qualities and this, you know... I mean, for me, I enjoy that whether it's mythology, the fantasy, or whatever. I just think it's brilliant. And so for just to get a little touch of it in this setting of the Potter books, I thought it was wonderful.
That, Sue, is why I love the Percy Jackson series. Little plug for another book. The Percy Jackson and the Olympian series is pretty awesome. Not as good as Harry Potter.
All right, so he grabs a sword... Well,
jumps in.
He doesn't grab the
sword.
No, he doesn't. Because it's freezing. He gets close to the sword.
He does get it. No, he closes. Yeah. His fingers
and
close
then
around it.
He gets attacked by the Grindylows.
No.
Okay,
no.
Something else strangles him.
That was wrong book.
The own darn rocket, Horcrux,
which
is strangling
senses the
him.
Power. Am I right here? It senses the power that can destroy it, and that's why it's trying to choke Harry.
Which is pretty darn smart, Horcrux.
But at the same time, it has an advantage because I would argue that the piece of soul in Harry knows its intention, so it can be, you know, it could be communicating a little bit. But I would even argue the fact that it's smart enough. It's a soul. It knows what's going on.
Yeah. So
we jumps in.
So he's saved by Mr. Ron.
And that's when I stood up and cheered like a crazy person.
Yes, he's back!
Yes! <You know? laughs>
So there he is. He's back. Ron. I love how he just, like, he just dived into the pool and he saved Harry's life. Yes.
So now all's going to be well and he's going to be accepted with open arms and he's not going to have any more traumatic experiences.
No, but we can't talk about that yet because we have a very important thing to talk about first.
And here it is. So they go to destroy the Horcrux, which is one of the coolestly described scenes, I think.
It is. It made me sad we didn't know what the cup did. I want to know what the cup did to protect itself.
It automatically made a potion when you put what liquid in it to make you more friendly and outgoing.
Horcrux, let's talk about the Horcrux.
So
And then Ron's like looking down at the sword, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I got this."
Yeah, so
like,
I just take this huge old artifact and.
Okay, let me ask you this: do you think the reason the sword was able to be rescued is because Ron saved Harry? Was that the act of bravery? I would argue that. Not that that could have been staged at all, because Snape could have never have known. But I think that's a more valid way of achieving the sword, or withdrawing the sword than jumping into cold water.
Yeah,
I agree.
Anyway, but it's here nor there.
Let me go look and see what Dumbledore actually says. Hold on a second. They find out as far as the Dean. "Good, very good," cried the portrait of Dumbledore. "Now Severus, the sword. Do not forget that it must be taken under conditions of need and valor, and he must not know that you give it. If Voldemort should read Harry's mind and see you acting for him, I know, and you still aren't going to tell me why it's so important. No, he will know what to do with it. And be very careful that they might not take kindly to your appearance after George Measley's mishap. Don't worry, I have a plan." So the conditions that he was looking for were need and valor, and Harry, I guess he figured that Harry's so stupid that if he jumped into a lake, he'll consider that valor, and didn't account for the fact that Ron was going to be the one doing the valor.
So now, you can't just give somebody the sword and let them use it?
I don't think so.
Then how did Harry give the sword to Ron and say, "Kill the Horcrux"?
Well, he was holding it already. It was Ron's to use at that moment. Ron was the true Gryffindor in that situation.
Well, I think he could have taken... I think Harry could have taken it from Snape if Snape just came out and like, "Here's a sword. Thanks, Snape. Bye."
That's what I mean. It's like, exactly. Why go through this whole ordeal?
Well, I mean, he could have, but then we just heard why he can't. Because if Voldemort reads Harry's mind...
Harry would suspect that Snape was working for him.
If he would have read his mind, then it compromises Snape's position at the school.
So what does Voldemort see then now?
He sees that he was able to get the sword the same way he did when he was 12, because he needed it and he acted bravely. That's what he thinks.
Why couldn't Snape transfigure a tree stump into like a wooden creature, or like Stan Shumpike, and have Stan Shumpike give him the sword?
He could have, but this is Snape.
Because then there's no valor. There's need, but not valor, and so Harry would wonder why he got it so easily.
I just don't understand the valor and the need bit if you can just hand somebody the sword.
Listen. All Harry knows about getting the sword is that you have to have need and valor. That's what Harry knows from... So unless Harry has those things in this situation, he will be suspicious. If he is suspicious...
Oh!
Then Voldemort might get suspicious.
Yeah, because look at... If this sword is just presented to him, kind of like, what? And then Voldemort sees that, he's going to be like, who has access to the sword? Snape does. So if Voldemort sees Harry getting it in the same circumstances as before, which is part of the enchantment of the sword, how Neville gets it at the end, then it'll leave like, oh, that's like the scapegoat. I get it now.
I'll accept that.
I'm so glad.
So, this is the most awesomely described scene ever, with the whole description of the locket opening up and how it had, like, eyeballs inside of it that were, like, looking at them, and how it was, like, taunting Ron. He's like, I've seen inside your soul, and you're mine, and you're going to be my slave, and etc.
I think it's interesting that the Horcrux is... When that locket's opened, it's just much more amplified at what it already does to the people who wear it. Because, like when they were wearing it, they were getting all mopey and depressed and just kind of irritated and just aware of their flaws and their weaknesses and exploiting that. And then when it's opened up, it's like, kabow, you know, like the whole thing. And since Ron's the one holding the sword, it aims its attention at Ron, because that's the one that they need to protect itself from.
I just want to mention again what Sue said, because I'm just paging back through this, and it's just so much, so even more striking that he's the son of a person named Arthur.
Oh, wow.
Who's doing this.
Right.
Look at you guys.
I love that these are like little mini Lucifers, you know, like you are being tempted, you know, at that moment, that pivotal moment when you must confront your fears. Here is Ron confronting his deepest, you think. And I just thought that they had it as the two people that he loves probably the most are his two, not more than his family, but I'm just, you know, his two compadres, his two, you know, and there they are. And I just, this whole scene was really, really, really powerful and really, I thought it was genuine, honest, you know?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, genuine and honest.
Yeah. I've seen your heart and it is mine. Least love always by the mother who craved a daughter. Least love now by the girl who prefers your friend, second best always, eternally overshadowed. and Ron. Oh my God, this scene. Oh.
So amazing.
Imagine just having somebody just voice and make all your insecurities and fears and worries and just have them form right in front of you and spit in your face with them. That is intense.
Mm-hmm. And I love the idea of like the Harlequin versions of Harry and Hermione, like these big, you know, traditionally glamorous but terrible creatures who could be them but aren't and are them without all the good, wonderful human things about them.
How excited do you think Dan and Emma are to shoot that?
Certainly not more excited than the rest of it, but I think it's probably one of the cooler things. And then my favorite part of the whole thing is, you know, you were great, you were great, once he does it, and he says, that's not, you're making it sound a lot cooler than it is, and Harry's like, well, yeah, I've been telling you this for what, how long now?
Oh yeah, that was great.
I just stuck the sword in a snake. I just set up a Patronus. I mean, I just did Expelliarmus.
I love this because, you know how fandom. I love our fandom. You know how we had that theory of like Ron in the chess, the seven chess moves.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And there he was, and here's this knight yielding this sword, and it's our man Ron, and there he is, and he has destroyed this Horcrux. I just thought that was sweet justice, that moment. Him, Ron,
I didn't
standing
even
there.
That. Look at you, Sue, with all your insight. That's awesome. That's such a great point.
I just...
Sue's on fire.
I love this. This chapter just was the bomb. I love this. It was so good.
And then in about 60 years, Ron turns into Dumbledore and goes back in time.
No.
Like Merlin and Isabel.
It was a very good theory when it first occurred. And the reason that I was so against it was I didn't believe that Dumbledore would lie to Harry. What a fool am I?
Oh.
Did Dumbledore lie to Harry or just omit?
No, he lied to Harry. In book 5 he said, I'm going to tell you everything, and clearly said,
oh, I was getting to it, but the bell rang and, you know, I was hungry.
Except that whole big part about you having a piece of that in you in that. All right. Is that it for this? We're going to talk about the fight with Hermione next time?
Yeah.
Yeah, they destroy the thing, and then they're all off to find Hermione, who's going to be so excited to take them both back with open arms.
Oh, my God. She's going to have a whole meal cooked. And
well, just real quick, not to prolong, but this goes with what we talked about on the last Bit by Bit with Harry and Hermione's relationship and how when Harry and Ron talk about it, he just reiterates, like, you know, I love her like a sister. And, like, I just really love that relationship that they have and how it's reiterated there and all doubts, you know, this is, like, it's just everything's exposed now. Because people might have thought something more of it at, you know, when they were at Godric's Hollow. But even now, it's just, like, it just shows the genuine, like, love they have for each other as, like, as mutual friends and just, like, brother and sister.
Yeah.
I really, really liked, so.
Which is beautiful. It's... Some would say better.
Yeah. I mean, surely they probably did some experimenting in that tent for all that weeks, but at least that's the opinion.
No. Okay, now.
Way to ruin the moment, John.
We're moving on.
It's not the opinion at all, and I have proof from Joe, so shush. See you later.
Bye.
It's time for Canon Conclusions.
Woo!
All about Snape.
Snape. Snape.
The conclusion of this week.
Dumbledore.
In itself.
Snape. I love that.
We should record Ron
Weasley
song.
That'd be fun, all of us doing it together.
Each other part.
What we do. Like, I can say John. Sue can say Melissa. Melissa can say Brack. And Brett John can say one other. I mean, anyway. Never mind.
No, I mean using the characters' names.
Oh, I see. That's a little less arrogant.
Like, actually recording. You know what I'm saying?
I'm confused.
Snape.
Wait, what?
Snape.
I'm so lost.
Severus Snape. All right, Severus Snape. Well, how are we starting with this? Because as we noted when we were getting ready for this call, we can talk about Severus Snape for not only hours, but days, weeks, maybe years, maybe all our lives. So what's our starting point with Snape, guys?
Well, there's so much to talk about with Snape on deeper theories and more specific things. And one of the great questions for me, and I don't know if you all agree, but we're talking about this, is why, during the course of the books, did Dumbledore never, even knowing what we learned after The Princess Tale, why did Snape never get that DAD job, the Defense Against the Dark Arts job? Why? Why did Dumbledore never let him have it?
I'm curious. I'm confused about this as well.
Does it have to do with the curse?
That's what I was going to say. Something with the curse. Huh. I think Dumbledore was aware of the curse. He couldn't do anything about it, so he just knew that he needed Snape there, or wanted Snape there, or he knew Snape wanted to be there, whatever the circumstance.
The whole idea, like, oh, he was already, you know, dark once, why tempt him to be dark again? But, like, he hangs out with Voldemort still at the Death Eaters for Dumbledore, so wouldn't that itself be more tempting than teaching kids how to defend against dark magic?
But do you guys
know what?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
You know what Snape's favorite spell was?
No.
What?
Expelliarmus.
So
that's
I was
Harry's favorite spell.
Perfectly done, thank you, John. But, you know, I mean, here's this, though. He always says that it would tempt him too much. Dumbledore said that. Even if it was not, if the curse was not for real, let's say. But here is Snape, supposedly his most trusted person that he has as his agent on the inside. I mean, and Snape has gone to the dark side at one point, and he understood it, and yet he had moved away from it, apparently. So, I find that. If I was Snape, and I don't know that I would view that as a valid reason, that supposed curse. I don't know that I would. I don't know. I would just...
I'd be ticked.
I would, too. I mean,
So why does Snape want the position so bad?
That's another question, too.
Exactly. Exactly. Good call. Good point.
What does he care? J.K. Rowling's talked about it, too, that the reason that he hasn't given it is because of Dumbledore, not because of Snape.
Right.
Like, she didn't say, oh, how do you know he really wants it? You know?
Right.
Interesting.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, but what's the allure for him? He's not against dark magic. He just is doing what he perceives to be his job.
Right.
He made clear that if it wasn't for the idea of protecting Harry for Lily, he wouldn't be in this.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm on the boat that if it wasn't for Lily, Snape would still be a Death Eater.
Yeah. I agree. He very nearly still is one. You know, I mean, he's doing this one job, and he's sort of like a man above those descriptions. But he's never, like, renounced the whole way of it, even when Dumbledore questions it. Like, is this love, compassion that I see coming? He's like, are you kidding me? It's Lily.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that kind of begs to ask the question then, is Snape's motivations for this entire thing more rooted in love or in hate?
Do you know what I always think of is the end? I mean, he really did earn it in the end, because, you know, he knows it's the end. I think he probably even knew Voldemort was going to kill him, and he knew that Harry had to die. He, you know, if he really wasn't totally on the good side by the end, his desperation, that whole conversation, you hear him talking with Voldemort, every other word out of his mouth is, but let me go to the boy, let me tell him, why can't I go, let me go, I need to go get, and he needs to get to Harry to tell him, even though he knows he's telling Harry he has to basically kill himself. And deny what he thought he was doing. So, like, it's like a total pledge of loyalty to the good side at that point. So I would have to argue that it was all love. He realized that it was what Lily would have wanted, at least, you know. Sue?
I just have real problems, though, with his ultimate motivation. I understand that he loved Lily and he felt remorse over it, but I kept going back to the thing when Dumbledore said to him, what you owe me. And he reminded him several times when we read during the Princess Tale about, like, what you need to do or something. And I thought that Dumbledore held that over his head several times. And it was, so for me, I wondered if it was not more of a sense of resentment that Snape did a lot of what he did. And I thought it was evident in many of his actions towards Harry throughout the course of the series. I mean, that he treated Harry so horribly. And yet Harry is supposed to be motivated by this great love for Lily, and yet his actions were just purely abominable most of the time.
Oh.
I mean,
yeah.
And, So.
Oh, I still have every problem in the world with the way he acted.
Yes.
He's not a nice guy just because he was a good guy. And yeah. I love that she points out that, you know, not all good guys, they're not all people you want to hang out with. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you guys convinced that for the whole time Snape knew Harry, he hated Harry? I mean, he gave Harry all of his memories at the end there. And it just seems like it was only because he wanted Harry to think better of him. But if he... Why would he care what Harry thought?
Because J.K. Rowling needs to tell him. I know what you're saying. Well, I think it started when Harry witnessed him killing Dumbledore. I think from probably... We have a year from that until the end of the book. And I think that maybe Snape...
Yeah.
was thinking all that time that he needed to explain to Harry, just to not have Lily's son think that he would do that.
Well, and that Harry would tell everybody else. He would clear his legacy, because I don't think anybody would have revered Snape if he had not given Harry all that proof.
I thought Snape knew at that point, though, that his legacy was pretty much mud as it was, that he had, and I'm sure he was aware of it. I mean, he has earned the disdain of his, after those events on the tower, he earned the revulsion of his supposed, I mean, his fellow comrades in the Order and, you know, people that he worked with every day for years now, like McGonagall, you know, I mean, and I mean, he had to know that his legacy was pretty much, you know.
Yeah, and so, like, I don't think that was his motivating factor. I mean, Snape didn't really seem to me to care much about his legacy.
Right.
I think he was more concerned that maybe there is a little bit of affection built up over time, or maybe it's just that it's Lily's son and he doesn't want Lily's son to think that he would kill Dumbledore. Or maybe it's just that yearning that, like, we all have to just be understood. He did this horrible thing, and he never got to tell a single soul that it was the bravest thing he ever did.
Right.
Yeah, and then Mary called him a coward?
Yes. Doesn't that make that more scene, Frankie, much more poignant now when you reflect back? You know, don't call me coward, and just much more powerful now that you reflect back on the sheer enormous bravery of that moment, actually what it was. Because I don't know that I could do that, you know? I don't know if I could.
I mean, he is completely selfless.
Yeah.
And even
I wonder
so much that it caught Dumbledore off guard. Do you remember when Dumbledore was like, you want me to you know, keep the secret, keep the best of you a secret?
Do we know what point in the timeline when he said, so you mean you've kept Harry all this time, had him stay alive just to let him die at the right time, like a stuck pig or something? And I wondered if that was the turning point for Snape
there.
I don't know.
I know this. Dumbledore was alive, and it was in 5, I think. I think it was the Order of the Phoenix timeline.
Yeah, so
I think that's when Dumbledore started to realize, when he said, are you kidding me after all this time? Because Dumbledore started crying when he saw the Patronus.
Dumbledore started crying?
Yeah, Dumbledore had tears in his eyes.
Yeah.
I think.
Hmm.
Pretty sure.
I don't remember that. I just listened to that chapter.
And I just think, you know, I mean, what would you be like? Say, if you were in that whole thing, and you realize that Snape is a character, but if you were to put yourself in a human context, and you have been doing all these incredible things, thinking that you were working to save this child's life, and to realize, I mean, what an emotion, what an impact that must have had on Snape.
At that point, Snape, he could have been all like, screw you, Dumbledore, I'm working against you to protect Harry. I mean, that's been his whole thing.
Mm.
It's been a higher priority for him to protect Harry than it was to... be Dumbledore's guy. I mean, he grew affection for Dumbledore over the years, I'm sure, and was upset when Dumbledore got into the situation he did with the ring and that he was going to die. But still, you'd think his number one priority would be whatever's best for Harry. He's just supposed to go along with it, that it's been the plan all along for him to die. Screwed up.
Yeah.
Wow. I just, you know, you think back on that, you just think, my goodness, you know, and it's hard not to feel some sort of anger towards Dumbledore, too, which is a whole other subject on its own, I mean, at that point.
A lot.
I mean, here it is. It's sometime in book 6. Yes, because they're already talking of, Dumbledore already knows that he is going to die. And it says, Lord Voldemort's soul, there'll be a time after my death. Do not argue, do not interrupt. There will come a time when Lord Voldemort will seem to fear for the life of his snake. And he tells him what? Tell him that on the night Lord Voldemort tried to kill him, especially. And Snape says, so the boy must die. And another long silence, and Snape said, I thought for all these years that we were protecting her for Lily. And he says, this is touching, Severus. Have you grown to care for the boy after all? For him, shouted Snape, Expecto Patronum, and the Silver Doe comes out. And as her silvery glow faded, he turned back to Snape, and his eyes were full of tears. Dumbledore's eyes were full of tears. And that's definitely in book six. I'm trying to find the exact time. Oh, wow. It's... I'm sorry, continue. I'll find it in a second.
Okay. Hey, Melissa.
Your performance was inspiring.
Shut up. This is not a performance.
Five points from Gryffindor.
You're such a goober. John. Yes, that's John. Our John.
Pay attention.
No, I won't, Snape. You hush.
Hey, Sue.
Yeah?
And what is the difference between monkshood and wolfbane?
Was it full moon?
You don't know?
Don't know. I don't know.
Pity.
And people out there are like, what is John doing? We love it. Snape is, he's so perfect. Okay. Ellen, yes.
I found it.
Yeah.
Snape is like questioning why they're always doing lessons or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like middle to end of book six that they have that conversation. Just FYI, so that we have the answer.
Okay. Yeah.
Shall we ask some people some questions?
Yeah, totally.
Have we talked about how crazy intense it was to find out that the Snape's worst memory was calling Lily a mudblood and not getting his pants turned upside down?
I'm sure we've talked about that at some point.
That's very powerful. I mean, when you realize, because the normal reaction would be, oh, he's been embarrassed. I mean, we think instantly it's like, you know, oh, I've been humiliated by someone else. But then you find out the deeper meaning was really, for me, it was very emotional. I remember when I was reading that. Yeah. So,
yeah.
I don't know, John. I mean,
it's funny because reading the whole Princess Tale story, I had to think that, like, God, you know, as far as who's relatable, I'd have to say, like, I would say that there are more Snapes in the world than James Potters, and that Snape would be the more relatable character to befriending a girl that he likes and to have a crush on her and to be your friend all this time, only to have the popular kid come by and, you know, lose the girl to the popular guy. That has to happen so much more often than there are popular guys stealing girls.
Hmm.
Why don't we get some people on the phone? We have people who've been waiting all
Anybody
time.
Want to raise your hand and join us in the call?
Yeah, this guy's been on for a while, so let me click him. Hold on.
Hi, this is Liza.
It's a lady.
Hi, it's showing me that I didn't click you. This is really bizarre.
Oh, okay. Really?
That's okay.
Oh my gosh, hi.
Oh my god, there's all these people unmuted now. Okay.
It's a party.
Yeah, I might have to remute some people. It's the party.
Everybody go ahead and talk at once.
Hang on.
Oh, right.
Hi, Liza.
Hello.
Hi.
Liza, where are you from?
I'm from D.C.
Oh, excellent.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah, are you guys coming out for the inauguration?
No.
I wish. I cannot.
Oh, it'd be so fun.
Oh, yeah, that'd be fun.
But I hear Joe's going
to
be there.
You know who's coming for the inauguration? J.K. Rowling.
Oh.
Yeah. I beat John to that joke. I'll have it now.
She's staying in the Leakin bedroom with Lincoln.
Okay.
Oh, fuck.
Okay.
Yeah, are you
going to
come
here?
No, it's just...
No, I'm talking stupid. About... Is there going to be a big concert?
No, there's going to be the big concert with Bono and Stevie Wonder.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
They're
going to
put that, on TV, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like 7 or something on HBO.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know what they're doing? They're putting that in movie theaters, so you can go to the movie theater and watch it.
Are they really?
Did you hear about that? Yeah.
Oh, cool. Wow.
Some company got made a deal with NBC to... Yeah. Good, cool beans.
Okay, so, Snape.
So,
J.K. Rowling's
Liza,
gonna be
wait.
There.
Wait, I have to say this, too. You're a Hufflepuff, right?
Yeah.
Yay, Squeak.
Okay.
Yay, go Hufflepuff.
How'd a Hufflepuff sneak in?
I love it. So go ahead, Melly.
I just wanted to know what your thoughts were while you listened to that conversation.
Well, the biggest thing.
What do you think about Snape?
Well, the biggest thing that struck me about Snape was what you guys mentioned earlier about how his worst memory was calling Lily a mudblood. Because that's just really kind of got me.
Yeah.
Because I have this friend who's always talking about how she always regrets this one kid who was bothering her when she was, like, in elementary school, and how she cut his eraser in half, and then he was really sad about it. And so that's the one thing that she always regrets. So I can kind of, you know, poor Snape. He loved her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I totally get her being pissed off and all that, but Lily, at some point, you got to get over it. He called you a bad name. You know, people get into fights. Friends get into fights, and they call each other names. They get frustrated, they call each other names. She really couldn't get over that. That was really the thing that ended it for Snape.
Mm-hmm. She should take lessons.
Well, really? It was, because it just set her life down a different path, that's all. It's not that for the rest of her life, she's thinking, oh, he called me a mudblood, I can't talk to him ever. It's it just started her life moving down a different road, and their roads diverged because he was a Death Eater. I mean, I think the Death Eater thing kind of, you know, clinched it.
Yeah.
So this was fifth year that happened, though?
Fifth year. Yeah, right after the
fifth
owl.
Year. Yeah, right after the
that
owl.
That happened in fifth year?
Yeah.
He was mad that she was hanging out with James and them, and those bullies, and she's like, look at your friends. They're the Death Eaters, wannabes, la-la-la-la-la. And so, like, that was... I think it was one of the kind of like, it was a tangible reason that kind of slapped her in the face and made her realize, hey, he is kind of going down the wrong path here. You know what I mean? It's a difference from being like, oh, he called me a bad name, but it was probably a bunch of different things, seeing him compromise, seeing him do different things. And this is one of the first or last things that kind of just really just kind of stung her and slapped her and like, hey, this is something that's legitimate now. It's affecting how he acts, you know, da da da. And then she just kind of called him out on it and he wasn't repentant about it. I don't know. I think it's something more like that degree. I don't think it was an actual name, like Melissa said. It was just the fact he's a Death Eater. And that was just a tangible, you know, reason or a tangible evidence of him being a Death Eater.
Do you think Snape and Lily ever had, like, an experimental, like, relationship beyond friendship?
No.
No.
I think he wishes.
You don't think she would have ever considered it? Because it seems like...
I think she would have considered it.
If Snape had made some better decisions, she would have been into that.
Yeah, I think she would have considered it. Actually, Joe, I think, said she would have considered it, but it just didn't happen. It didn't go that way because he made that bad choice. It set things down a road, and that's what happened. I mean, it's like the dominoes. You do, you know, you put on the right kind of pants one day, and 30 years later, you go out. You never know what action causes these things, and
yeah,
deleting somebody from your life is a big action. So
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Maybe if Snape, or if she didn't cut Snape out of her life, she'd still be alive today.
The prophecy still would have been fulfilled.
Think about that, Brainbuster.
It's strange because he might not. He either wouldn't be a Death Eater, or they still would have ended up apart. Because there's no way she would have. You know.
Hmm.
And then we wouldn't have had this story to read, so...
I agree with Guest 48.
No, I think she would have still been Snape dead.
Snape totally could have snogged her under the right circumstances.
Yeah, under the different circumstances, which is the key, thing. The circumstances that aren't the ones we read about. Do you know what I mean? Under different circumstances, anything could happen.
I mean, yeah.
How do you think Snape would have changed if they'd gone out?
Yeah, I think you're right. Anyway... Listen, thank you, Liza. And
well, Snape needed some kind of, like, makeover.
Oh, sorry, John.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right, that's enough for Snape this week. Let's push on out to the wrap-up, and we'll pick up Snape next week.
Okay, it's the wrap-up. It's the end of the show as we know it.
The drums.
What a fun show, man.
Awesome. We had some really good talk, canon talk and everything, my goodness. And bit by bit, we're just on a roll.
Bit by bit.
All right.
Well, it is the drums.
I want that music, John. Send it to me. It gets right on this.
That ought to be all you guys' ringtones when you call me.
My ringtone for you guys is the Leaky Song.
I love the Leaky Song. The Leaky Call. Do you guys know the Drake Leaky Song? It's at the bottom on Leaky. Come on, find it, listen to it, play it all the time. I do.
Yeah, who in the chat has listened to the Leaky Song?
I think everybody's
before?
Heard it, haven't they?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they love it. They heart that song.
You mean this Leaky Song?
Yeah. Yeah, that.
That one.
Yep. There we go.
Got it. Google it if you can't remember. I love when people. I want to record a lot of people singing that and put it on, make it a YouTube video.
That'd be an awesome YouTube video.
You know.
We should do that.
Like, everybody, yes. Okay, here we go.
I think
record
we should
record yourself singing the Leaky Con.
Or we could do it at LeakyCon.
You just heard it now.
Promo video.
Record yourself doing the Leaky song. Put it on YouTube or send us the video. Send it to staff@pottercast.com, and we're gonna put them all together. But put it on your YouTube channels and stuff, because I'm gonna like edit them together as a fun little everybody sing the Leaky song
video.
Don't
give me this too embarrassing nonsense.
Oh BS! Embarrassing my foot. You see what we do in those vlogs? Get out of here.
I'm gonna get Moses Cat to record some of it.
Oh yeah, I'm doing a Harry History thing too. People are gonna talk about the book. Actually, you had about 5 days, so I hope this comes out before then. But they're gonna talk about the book and put it on YouTube, and I'm gonna edit it into one big file, which we did once before, but it was before the book came out, really. So nobody had really read it yet, so there were only like 5 responses. So yeah. So we could do that, too, if you want.
You know, Melissa.
Yeah.
Our new...
Oh, don't give me that bull. Sorry. Sorry. I find that to be a totally ludicrous proposition, so... Okay.
That remains to be seen.
Okay. Harold, what else do you
have
to say?
It is Noe Thursday. For gosh darn it, I have to make a Noe Thursday video today.
Do it, John. And don't forget the question of the week.
Yeah.
What's the question of the week?
Which is, what job in the ministry would you take?
I know, I actually really like that idea.
I like Sue's answer.
And then your question is next week.
I think about the question next week?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's your turn.
Oh, man.
Somebody had a suggestion that on Fridays we should ask, that when we're done with, we're through the Pottercasters, we should have somebody else, like we should take a question of the week from the listeners.
Oh, that'd be a great
that's
idea.
That's a good idea.
Frankly, I think that's a fantastic idea. So, Frack, in your video of your week... So, like, next week, remind people to leave comments asking, you know, with what the thing should be, and then since I'm the next one, I'll, I guess, choose it, or we can all choose it, or something.
Sure.
The doodle video of the week? What is it?
Oh, we love your doodles, Frankie. People were mad because you haven't put a doodle up lately.
Yeah,
oh,
I
doodle,
need to
what's
do
the
that.
Deal,
well,
doodle?
Because I haven't had a lot of coherent doodles, and actually doodled today, and yes, the other day, about... the evil Hermione and Harry coming out of the locket. So
I want to see that.
Oh, cool.
Back. Oh, completely.
But it's really doodly. It's not great because it's kind of stream of consciousness and it's kind of scandalous. So I have to cover some stuff up.
Okay.
Hey, guys, I'm totally making my Noe Thursday right now.
Oh, cool. Are you really? You're recording it while you're doing podcast?
I am.
Gimmick.
Oh, man.
You should record the dueling podcast thing that's happening.
This is crazy. There's so much going on. My computer's smoking.
Smoking. My computer's disintegrated. Oh, I'm British.
Oh, no.
I have to go finish my fitty video. Do you know what I'm making tonight, Tom?
Oh, don't tell me. It's a surprise.
Oh, I can't tell you.
Well, I'm going to edit my video, because tomorrow is another Frankie instructional drawing video.
Oh, awesome.
Yay! I was so excited to do that banner, and then you, like, upped the awesome with the Nargle thing, and then you never did the banner.
The banner was the secret lies within my heart.
Ah, I want to know how to do it.
No, so, it's not a banner. It's Harry. Draw a hairy face.
Okay. Fine.
So, for all of you out there who have no idea what in the world we're talking about, you haven't been to youtube.com/podcast.
Subscribe to us.
And you're missing out.
Ooh,
if you haven't,
you.
Hit that little yellow button to subscribe.
And when you go
you know
to your
why.
Friend's house... When you go to your friend's house to look at check your email, you log into their computer, subscribe from their account. Subscribe. Do it. Gorilla style.
Oh, jeez.
Yes. Oh, and you know what else? I just thought of a fun idea. We don't put anything out on the weekends, right?
Yeah.
No. Nope.
What if on Saturday or Sunday there was a exclusive preview clip of that week's podcast? On YouTube.
And what,
you guys
what
think
would,
that's cool?
What would be the audio? I mean, the video.
Probably just me dancing or something.
That's fine with me. What about you guys?
Do you guys think that'd be cool? I'm seeing a few yeses.
Sue's quiet.
I just...
So what do you think?
Just you are going to do this once randomly on the weekends, because I'm not putting any dancing videos of me up.
I was gonna ask you to actually edit, so...
No.
I think it's about that time, you guys.
All right. Well, maybe you'll see that on Saturday, but you'll never know unless you click youtube.com/podcast.
No, you won't. Mm.
Of course, people won't hear this until Sunday anyway.
Oh, hey, our friend Matt, by the way, from the Wandering Willow, he's on tour. I keep meaning to tell people on Pottercast. And, yeah, he's totally on tour right now. So if you want to see the Wamping Willows perform, go to myspace.com/thewampingwillows and check out his stuff.
You should.
Is he performing right now?
Yes, probably exactly right now, yeah.
Oh, I was going to say we could call him and ask him how tour's going.
We can call him and expelliarmus him.
We could. We have fun with that.
Expelliarmus! Okay.
Okay.
Okay, guys.
Is it time to start twiddling your own dials?
My
friend style.
Can you not like defoul the actual words of canon?
What?
Can you actually not like refrain yourself from defouling the text?
Defouling the canon.
Yes. Defouling.
I like that word, defouling.
It's fun to say.
Podcast does not condone twiddling your friends' dials. Just twiddle your own, it's fine.
Oh my god. Josh, can you say it properly,
the
please?
The next
password. Oh, we're on B. Okay, I was stunned by that.
No, I'm waiting for John to say it properly.
Yeah, I know. I was just...
Oh, okay. Okay, well then, until next time, keep twiddling those dials.
The next password will be... Odd Socks.
Ooh, okay.
Trust me on that one.
Keep each other safe.
Keep faith.
We've missed it. Bobby is free.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
This week's podcast was edited by Brianna Roof, Michael Beckett, Andrew Garner, and Armin Bulstead, and produced by John Noe and the Pottercast Quartet. Props to the Pottercast transcription elves who transcribed this and every other episode of Pottercast at Pottercast.com. To find out more about our show, listen to past episodes, and learn how to be part of future episodes, visit us at Pottercast.com.
Yeah,